Welcome to the podcast, One Way Or, Jewish Questions and Musings, episode number 13. I'm your host, Andrew Tertis. I'm here with my co-host, Michael Unterberg.
How's it going?
Well, very well. And we're both here with my father, Elliot Tertis. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Andrew. Hi, Michael.
How's it going?
Nice to be here.
Nice dusty day in Israel.
I've never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mild sandstorm. So the sky keeps turning from gray to beige and back to gray again.
Mild.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Okay. I'll take your word for that.
Well, is this our geographical survey and weather survey? No, we're here actually. I asked my father to be on this podcast really to look at the idea of legacy, the continuation of the Jewish people, and the as being a thriving community, moral community, and well-funded community. I'd like to start with asking you, if you can remember, Dad, what first got you interested in serving community, in being engaged and giving of your time to not just help yourself or your family, but the greater community.
If I might go away from your question a little bit, because when you said you wanted me to talk about legacy, it made me think, what is my legacy? And I think I'd like to start there to get to your question.
Go right ahead.
Because I look at where my personal growth comes from and interest, and my father was an immigrant, came from what is now Belarus, province of Minsk, from a shtetl, and he is...
Do you know the name of the shtetl?
Dzhnetich, which was very hard to find when I did a search doing a family genealogy, which my father and only a nephew, my one first cousin, were the only survivors. He had five sisters who perished. His parents perished.
And, we're talking about in pogroms before the wars.
Before the wars.
And during. We don't know exactly the progression because he left when he was 19 in 1919 with only one other cousin.
I'm sorry, Jeff, but we should point out that we're going to hear some annoying background noise. So we'll just...
it's dust storm construction here.
Yeah, so we'll ask you to please bear with us.
It has nothing to do with my legacy.
No, I would hope not. Yeah, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
And when he came to this country, he was kind of adopted by the greater family because he essentially now was an orphan, even at 19. And the reason that's important was he took me to visit every Sunday morning all those people who cared for him when he came to this country, which created part of my feeling of a legacy and caused me, and later on in my life, to decide to do a family genealogy.
Now, this is what? This is a sort of broader family, like second cousin, something like that? Like
yes.
But this sort of tribal connectivity, he was in need, he knew he could turn to them.
Right.
And then he felt that it was his, he just naturally assumed.
His duty.
It would be
to
his
pay
duty.
Respect.
Right.
And I'll point out that I grew up not with the terminology first cousin, second cousin so much. Cousins were cousins.
Right.
So when I think there was, dozens of cousins, and now I did have a close relationship with my aunt and uncle's kids. But that, it wasn't like, oh, those are really distant cousins. It was pretty much, there was that idea.
They were cousins.
And I get it from here.
Did you have cousins club meetings?
Yes. Yes. And it was a large group, large, greater family.
I think that's sort of lost in the generations, cousin club get-togethers. I don't think that, is there such a thing anymore?
Well, I have, on my mother's side, a small family, but I've kind of been the person who sustained that, and we have two meetings a year. We have a Hanukkah party, and we have a picnic in the spring, in the summer, and we have 35 to 45 people who come every year, and that sustains that. On my mother's side, my grandparents were immigrants, came from Odessa, and I lived in a three-generation household, so I learned from my grandparents. And
do you know when they came from Odessa?
In the early 1905.
So probably Ellis Island.
Ellis Island, yeah. And I won't go into any of their stories, but my father's nephew, my first cousin.
Oh, I do love stories.
My only first cousin became the shrechet for Rebbe Schneerson.
Really?
Yes. He was one of the shrechets who went to the Chabads all over the world who didn't have anyone to do ritual slaughter.
Huh.
And he would come to Brooklyn. But when he came to Brooklyn, he would get on a train to come to Hartford because he wanted to honor his only other living relative, me.
Wow.
And my father.
Now, how did you grew up in Hartford?
In the Hartford area, yes.
How did your parents end up in Hartford?
Because that's where cousins were.
Uh-huh.
That when my father came here, that's where he came to stay with them.
And did they?
And a lot of the family came to the Hartford area in Connecticut. Central Connecticut.
Was there shared business, or they just networked, or they each one made their own way financially?
There were a number of different kind of businesses. One of the biggest businesses was many of the family went into the automobile sale business. There were others in furniture,
ground floor opportunity.
Dairy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's cousins of my father, who I called my grandparents, had a very large farm, and I would spend every Sunday and two weeks in the summer at the farm, and it was a great experience, growth experience.
Yeah, someday somebody's going to look into Jewish farming at that stage in history, because it's like an untold story.
Actually a book that I'll bring it in sometime actually explores Connecticut Jewish farms from that time period.
It was published by the Jewish Historical Society of Hartford, which I've been on the board of for a number of years.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was a wonderful thing that they did. They've done a number of books on Jewish history in the Hartford area, and that was one, reaching out to the farms, Jewish farms of Connecticut.
How close is Hartford to the coast?
It's an hour.
1 hour.
1 hour.
1 hour to the Sound, yeah.
So there wasn't really anybody in Hartford who was... who were making their living, you know...
On the water?
No, there's nothing like that.
No. So that is part of my background, and that was paying respects to the greater family. And I think that is something that thinking about my heritage was something that brought me to wanting to sustain heritage. And it's hard to go into my whole story, but when I was a kid, I thought I was pretty much of an introvert. But at one point in time, I had mentors who developed me. And early on in my teens, I started to become a leader in the Jewish community. Spent a lot of time at the Jewish Community Center, and going to shul, which I had no Jewish background before then. I did have a bar mitzvah, but I only had a rabbi we hired to teach me my haftorah.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother and my father and my grandparents, none of them ever went to shul.
Mm-hmm.
My grandparents were socialists. And so I...
In other words, they already in Belarus?
Here.
In
the States. And we celebrated every holiday in the house, mm-hmm. even, you know, and had a very, very vibrant Passover Seder. And
now, so, what language did they speak in the home?
Interesting question, because they spoke a lot of Yiddish if they didn't want me to understand. Otherwise, they spoke English.
Uh-huh.
And when they finally found out that I understood everything they said, which unfortunately I didn't tell them I could understand, and I never spoke it, so I only have vague memory of the Yiddish that I heard all that time. They started to speak in Russian or Polish.
Huh.
So there was multi...
Sure.
They spoke number of languages, but mostly English in the household. So as I became a leader at the JCC...
Well, when you say you became a leader as a teen, what kind of... what activities were you involved with?
I was involved in B'nai B'rith Boys, which is ACA, and became a leader, a president of that, and then a regional leader, and also became directly involved in the JCC and all their activities. So that was really what I would call my first real solid contact with Judaism. At ACA, one of the things I did with B'nai B'rith girls is we made a pact that every Friday night we would go to services. And that's how I learned the service, because I never had experience of doing that. So.
And where did you go? What was the...
A conservative synagogue.
A conservative synagogue called...
The Emmanuel Synagogue in Hartford. Other stories I'll... at another time.
Okay.
Offline.
You know? Well, we'll fit some in. But
I think that that brought me to a greater appreciation of my heritage and also Jewish heritage. Learned a lot of that through the JCC. And I, even in college, I was involved in Hillel. And after I got married, I really became involved in our synagogue community. At 33, I was president of the synagogue. And
still the same synagogue?
No, now it was a small synagogue in our community, which was only founded in 1955. And I was president in maybe 15 years later, around there.
Mm-hmm. Congregation B'nai Shalom.
Where you grew up in.
Yeah.
I've been still connected with that synagogue through a number of iterations, which is now a merger, which I was instrumental in seeing happen, because small synagogues are either going out of business or merging with other synagogues in the States. I began to really think about Israel as I started to volunteer doing fundraising for the Jewish Federation.
And when is this?
Ooh, probably in my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I would volunteer to do what they call Super Sunday. And for some reason, at some point in time, they forgot about me because I lived in a part of the community that wasn't engaged.
Hmm.
And when I moved into the engaged community, after our kids were... and moved, matter of fact, at this time they were all in California, we moved into West Hartford, and all of a sudden I became available again and started to volunteer more actively. But when I had a business and I sold it in 1992, and almost the day after I consummated the sale, I called a friend of mine who I knew was very heavily involved in the Jewish community, and I said to him, I want to volunteer, and I want to volunteer in the Jewish community, and can we have lunch? And we had lunch, and the next day he called the executive director of the Jewish Federation, and she called me the next day, and had an informational lunch with me, and wanted to know what my skills were, what my interests were. And a week later, I became involved in the Federation. My background was in pharmacy and in long-term care. And through the Federation, I got involved in an organization called Hebrew Healthcare, and have been on their board for 15 years or more, and heavily involved there.
Now, that's where your grandmother spent her last years.
My grandmother... my mother,
and then my mother-in-law, right.
Each of them all spent time there. And I think that when we're talking about legacy, to me, legacy is what I've gotten and what I want to pass on. And after the Federation mentioned my name to the Jewish Community Foundation of Greater Hartford, and I was invited to be on their board. And we had a speaker that we brought in to speak to financial advisors and lawyers about ethical wills.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was one of the more important things I've heard in my life about transmitting your ethical, your ethics and your belief system to your children. And I decided that it was time to sit down and write my own ethical will. And I wrote it and I shared it with my wife, and she helped add to it, and so that it was ours.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that about 2 years ago. And after doing it, I started to laugh because I thought an ethical will was something you had to attach to your regular will, your estate will. And I called somebody who was at the foundation, and I said, I've written this, but with my genealogy, which my mother lived to 100 and her mother to 99, with my genealogy, my kids will read this when they're in their 70s. And it made me laugh to think they don't need that at that time of their
right.
life. And she said, no, you can share it any time. So that summer, we all came together, the whole family were together, and I read it to my children. And what they said was, we didn't learn anything new about you, but it's good to have it in writing so that we, you know, it'll sustain.
Well, in a way, that's kind of what you want. Like, you would hate for them to go, huh, I didn't know you thought that. As a father, you...
Sure,
you,
sure.
You'd want them to say, well, yeah, of course, that's you.
Now, back to your question.
Yes.
Reiterate it.
Well, I'll update it for where we are in the conversation.
Sure.
Well, you gave the aspect of what drew you to the service is that as soon as you really contacted the formal Jewish community, you've been active. And you're talking about over half a century, really. I mean, considerably more with that kind of participation. When you were working in your business, you were very busy, and there's a way that these last couple decades, the busyness, there's this vitality that you have had, also in serving the consultant pharmacy associations, but in particular Jewish community. And would you speak to one, like how you've used your service to as in a fulfilling way for yourself, that it is clearly not draining to you at all, and then also what it is that you're really feel you're giving and wanting to give to the community.
And I want to know why Jewish.
Really good. That's a really good question. And I think part of it is because I had such a little Jewish education that I didn't want to see that happen to other people. I wanted to make sure that they have every opportunity to have a full Jewish education.
Why? I'm going to keep pushing you on this because
sure.
because that you just knocked it back a step. You said, "Well, because I didn't have much of an education, I didn't, but it was important to me, and I wanted other." Okay, but why? Why was that important to you?
My Jewishness resonates with me. Until the age of 11, I lived our first. That's when I lived with my parents and grandparents. I lived in a neighborhood that I was the only Jewish kid in my grade. And if I didn't walk home with my friend, who was my friend and neighbor, who was Italian, and I walked home alone, I was chased every day. And I even remember a mother telling her son what she wanted him to do to me. Which I wouldn't repeat because it was pretty awful.
You heard her say that to
her? Right from her front porch, telling...
Shouting out to her son.
Yeah.
Because you were Jewish.
Yes.
And this was an immigrant family, or this was...
I don't know who they were. Right. But the neighborhood was...
You don't care when you're a kid running away, right?
Right. The neighborhood was heavily Polish and Italian, Irish neighborhood.
Interesting.
Yeah. So... that gave me a feeling, why am I Jewish and what is that? Why is that happening to me? And when we moved, when my grandfather passed away to the Jewish part of town, it's interesting. My first feeling was, wow, I never knew there were so many Jews, because I had no relationship to the rest of the Jewish community. And it was a very comforting feeling, very comforting. I could feel today the difference that it made in me at that moment in time.
So in your first memory, being a Jew was sort of a negative, and then being able to find a place of comfort among Jews became, so that's very background in your identity.
Mm-hmm.
That being a Jew means I'm safe, I'm comfortable, I belong when I'm with other Jews.
Exactly. But I think it's beyond that.
Did you feel, I'm sorry to interrupt you, you feel a flip side enmity to those other ethnicities in the neighborhood? Or, in other words, did you ever want to do to that kid what the mother, do you remember feeling that sort of...
What I recall and what stuck with me is my mother always saying to me, accept each person as an individual, not as a group. And don't let an individual's action make you feel different about anybody else. It's only that individual. And that is something I hope I transmitted to my children. You know...
It also must have made the injustice of how you were being treated all the more painful when you come home.
Oh, sure.
And your parents are presenting to you.
On top of that, our landlord was anti-Semitic and wouldn't let me play in our own yard. You know, so it would be the feeling of anti-Semitism also resonated. And as I got older, it made me think about what is that all about.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, at that age and even in my teens, I didn't connect any of that feeling to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But as I became more involved in the Jewish organizational world, and had the opportunity to see what is happening throughout the world and what was happening to the Jewish community in the Eastern Europe, and how Jews were fleeing to Israel, looking for a place to be home. And thinking about what happened to my father's family gave me a very different feeling about being Jewish, and that became important to me.
And what years are you talking about here? 70s, 80s?
60s? 70s and 80s. And when I really became intimately involved would be around 1990. And, you know, when I
so
became more intensely.
All that youth groups, JCC, Israel was not an issue. Even during those years where Israel was... sort of struggling to get on its feet, and that really wasn't being discussed in the community around you.
No.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Yes, it is. The more I got involved, the more intensely my Jewish feeling became deeper. And I have to say, a parallel situation was with my wife, who also, her father went to an Orthodox synagogue and had two daughters and never brought them to synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had as much Jewish education as I did.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were married...
Is this also in Hartford?
No, she was born in... she went to Forest Hills High in Queens, and then her family moved to the country in Norwalk, Connecticut. But in no time did she have any Jewish education.
Mm-hmm.
But in my grandpa's last years, he went to Orthodox Shul in West Hartford when they moved closer to a town away from us. But I had also never visited him there.
Mm-hmm.
I never went to that shul.
When we were married and had our first child and then our second child, we had a conversation about our background and what we wanted to see our children's background was. And fortunately, I really wish I could put where the seed was, but all of our children, I wouldn't say they embraced their Jewish education, but they stuck with it. They stuck with it until they finished high school. And looking at how all of them have proceeded with their Judaism, there was something that happened early on that helped make that happen.
It's at the foundation level of how they built a sense of identity. It's one of the building basic foundational issues for all of them.
Look at our sons, I see three people who are good human beings with all having a good moral standard, a very strong relationship to their Jewish community, and a belief in their legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes me feel really good, and I know it makes my wife feel well as well to see that whatever we did or whatever happened around them that made them that way, they just turned out to be good people and good Jews.
Well, I have a question. Thank you for saying these nice things about your sons. I want to know, and I would invite a story, at least one story, about that you've met with an organization, you know, maybe in the Hebrew healthcare some time where I know you were involved in the long-term planning recently, where you're coming to the group and bringing new ideas that might have, what kind of ideas have you brought that might have opened the ideas or thinking out of the box, kind of giving recommendations so that it wasn't just increasing bad membership, but it was more like teaming with other organizations, that kind of legacy.
Sure. The Jewish Federation exec just changed and took a new job, and they were doing a search for a new executive director, president. And this gentleman was hired to be the interim exec till they found a new exec, and ultimately this January 1st, they invited him to be the permanent exec. And I wake up mornings frequently and have to sit down and write what was in my head that night. And I guess I had thought about him and his future because he was a social worker and never been involved leading a Jewish organization. And I sat down and wrote an agenda of the kind of kind of things I thought would be helpful to him. And I had already resigned from the board, but I was still kind of active because mm-hmm. they would ask me for my opinion. And I called him and asked him to have lunch, and he agreed. And one of the things I presented to him is about Super Sunday, which I had mentioned before. And Super Sunday, they train people and they give them cards and they say, call Michael, call Andrew, and ask them about their gift and if they can increase their gift.
Been there, done that.
See, Super Sunday is the annual Jewish Federation fundraiser for those who don't know.
Right.
Yeah, and that's exactly how it works. You get a bunch of cards.
Right.
You have to go through the cards making calls.
And I never followed that practice when I did Super Sunday, and I wanted, and I was successful because what I felt it should be is not an ask, but a question. And the question, and I explained to him that I think there should be a different training because the general public does not know what a federation of today does, and I thought that by asking the question, it gives you an opportunity to tell them about what the Federation does and what is going on in Israel and why do we send money to Israel and what is that money for and how is it used? What do we do in Eastern Europe and why? So that asking a question ultimately makes the person think as to why are they making a donation as opposed to just a rote donation that they're
going to make. But that's the question? What question are you asking?
The question is, what do you know about what the Federation does in the States, in the community, or in Israel?
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me what would interest you to know more about?
Mm-hmm.
That's the opening question. And I find asking a question, I actually use an example. A few years ago, I had a dentist on the phone who had given $400. When I called him, his first question to me was, what did I give last year? And I told him, and he said, same this year. And I said to him, do you have a few moments for me to ask you a question or two? And he said, sure. And I started out by saying, do you know what we do in Israel? And he said, yeah, we send money. I said, but you know why? And I went on to explain about our sister city in Afula, about what we do for social services, you know, and I went into a deep, and it was probably 2 or 3 minutes of mm-hmm. talk. And at the end, he said, I had no idea. I'll tell you what, make it $2,000. And I said, what? Because I was hoping he would make 20-30%,
right.
You know. But he said, and I said, really? He said, yes. I said, why? Because I know more about what my money does, which I didn't know before. And knowledge made him more a feeling of community, of doing something that's valuable.
Now, the way that community is set up are these funny concentric circles, right? You have these people involved in the Federation. You're from that cadre of people who are running this show.
Yeah.
And now you have volunteers who come in and man the phones, and they're, I don't know what, call them tier two, or they're not people who are working, but for the most, I mean, obviously the people who work at the Federation are also manning the phones. But the people coming in to man the phones are people who are not day-to-day running the Federation. They're whatever. I mean, they may be working in some sort of Jewish-related career, but most of them are not. And they're connected through synagogue or whatever. And they're calling people, you know, this sort of tier three of people.
I see you've been there, done that.
Yeah. But and to me, there's something, and I don't know exactly what it is that intrigues me about this model of how Jewish life in America works.
You know, by the way, there isn't one Super Sunday anymore, because if I haven't reached you, there's another Sunday
right. That's
going to be your Super Sunday that you get called. So that when you talk about these concentric circles, they repeat themselves to
right.
reach the people that haven't been reached.
Oh, I remember those cards, the cards of, you know, didn't respond, follow-up cards.
But doing that, by the way, really increased my own personal depth of my experience. Because that success of being able to explain to somebody else why it's important of what we're doing, I did myself.
Mm-hmm.
I learned about it. I was fortunate enough to come to Israel on a couple of missions, go to the Ukraine on a mission, and also once we went on those first two missions, my wife and I came on another trip on our own, and then when Andrew and Shoshana were here, we've come many times. I think that the experience is one that I hope I can transmit to others so that they can deepen their experience. It's
because most American Jews haven't been to Israel.
Correct. And somebody asked me very recently, outside of family, what gives me the greatest pleasure? And one of the things I said is mentoring other people. And what I just talked about on Super Sunday, that is, to me, that's a mentoring piece.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's important to me because I am who I am, because all of the people who took an interest in me and mentored me makes me who I am today, and I wanted to see if I can do that to others and make a difference in their lives.
Now during your professional career...
And by the way, that's legacy.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's legacy.
That's how legacy... That's the chain of legacy.
Correct.
So when you were running your business, your pharmacy business, where were you in the concentric circle? Tier 1, Tier 2, or Tier 3? I'm looking at this again. I'm focusing on the Jewish angle.
Well, to the Chabad rabbi in Hartford, I was in Tier 1.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he looked. That's where he wanted me. That's where he searched. He would come out. It was a 20-mile drive to my business, and he would sit there and wait until I was freed so that he would have a moment of my time.
Did he know of your connection to the Shochet? He didn't even know that?
Actually, I didn't know until only a few years ago that he knew, because it was his brother and my cousin who were in yeshiva in Poland together.
Hmm.
And were like, and when my cousin came to the States, he stayed with his brother.
So what? So he felt, you think that's why he felt an interest in looking out for you, or no?
No.
Just you had a personal connection?
Just his getting to know me.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, my cousin passed away. He was in his late 80s, passed away 2 years ago. He lived in Haifa.
Yeah, by the way, I'm not saying that Jews are on different tiers. I'm just saying in terms of involvement.
I understand. Right.
You obviously moved. What you're describing is moving it from your professional stage of life to your volunteer stage of life, a deeper involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And what I don't know, like, what's your impression in terms of in American Jewish life, talking about legacy, how is that progression going overall? Do you think?
I think that, I don't want to say that Judaism in the United States is in trouble, but probably like many places, that their levels of commitment to their Jewishness or not. We know that the divorce rate in the United States overall is 50% or over now, that intermarriage is very significant, that all those things affect the future of Judaism in the United States, you know. All those things have an impact on the future. You know, with a small synagogue closing or merging and continue to have decreased membership.
Now, it's funny that you use the term Judaism, because up until now, we've been talking about Jews.
Sure.
Jewish community, we've mentioned synagogue.
Sure.
But that's not the same. That's Jewish life and Jewish helping each other and an infrastructure and how we make sure that we're watching out for people, whether it's later in life or in countries where people need help or in our community. But so far, we really haven't discussed Judaism.
True.
Right? Anything?
Well, good point. I lost my train of thought for a second.
Well, I guess there's, to me, there's sort of two things. There's the Jews, and whether you're calling that an ethnicity or a community or whatever, a nationality. And then there's Judaism. And I think that, you know, what you're describing at the work at the Federation is at least supposed to be where maybe I'm saying this wrong, but I think the way you express your Judaism isn't what matters
mm-hmm. here.
Right. I know what I want to say in connection with that. My involvement in the foundation and federation, both, we have a campaign to raise $40 million to help endow the entire Jewish community, which is the first one in the country that included all the agencies, all the Jewish day schools, and also any of the synagogues. Never been done before. I just got an email that we've reached over $30 million, and we know that we're going to make to the 40. And one of the things...
And this is of all denominations, yeah?
This is
all affiliations.
All inclusive, including the JCC, including all kinds of, you know, the mm-hmm. Hebrew Healthcare, the long-term care facility, all of that. One of the little benefits that came out of that is it's the first time that the entire Jewish community has worked together for one goal. And out of that came, for the first time, that all three Jewish day schools, who have always been in competition with each other, because you have a conservative one, you have an Orthodox one, and then you have a Schechter, which is an elementary school. They all are working together for the very first time and in concert with talking about sharing teachers, about sharing any of the administrative things they can do. There is really talking to each other, which is going to help them all sustain where they may not individually have done that and were concerned about doing that.
Which is what's pushing them to actually cooperate. Necessity is
which the, we were able to bring to them yeah. and say, if you do this, we are going to help you.
Interesting.
And help make that happen.
So the impetus came.
Those
from
are the kind
outside.
Of things yeah. that make me feel really good about, again, what is our legacy? What are we going to make happen? And this is something that is important in the community to have these day schools. So I found out, and I don't know why, one of the people who I happened to bump into, didn't know, met at lunch only a week before I came to Israel, and we introduced ourselves, and he says, oh, I know who you are. I said, how? He says, well, I was on the Schechter board, and I had been president for 4 years, and we were looking for new leadership, and somebody suggested your name is to be, and I said, of all people... I'm surprised in Jewish education that you would bring my name up because of my background. And he said, your name came up because of your leadership skills,
yeah.
and we thought Schechter could use that. But he said it turned out somebody who was already in the community stepped up and said they would do it. I think about, why would something like that happen? Well, it happens, I think, as much out of fear that it's not going to succeed, and they start to reach out beyond what would be their normal wall. That's, I think, important for Jews to be thinking about, is reaching beyond their normal walls to sustain. And being involved in the foundation has been a really very strong part of my life, because I see that's what we do. It's helping organizations look at their future, look at how do they sustain, how are they going to continue, how are they not just going to survive, but how are they going to succeed in survival?
I mean, in a way, I guess it's a little bit, I wish it hadn't had to have come from the outside, but at least it was met with, you know, with there was reception towards it. I know in my own experience, my efforts to try to make things like that happen, where different schools would share resources.
Mm-hmm.
Helps everybody's bottom line.
Absolutely.
And I've never met with success.
Well, this is
from pushing
this
from
is
the
unusual
inside.
And I think I have to, there are certain people who've helped make that happen.
Do you think that possibly is a model that will increase in American Jewish culture?
The name of our campaign is called Aim Chai,
uh-huh.
and And it's already been talked about in other communities in the country because we've written about what we are accomplishing and it's showing our success, and other communities are starting to talk about how to emulate that.
It seems like such a gimmick.
I agree with you. I want to go bring it to part of the legacy that you and Mom have been working towards, and that you created a fund, and that you're inviting folks from the community from all age groups who have given or not given before to actually consider their specific legacy. Can you speak about that?
What is it? Can you be specific? Like, you there's something you want to...
Yeah, that in this new kind of reaching out, that they've been actually encouraging folks in the community to create funds in their family name, in memory, or in honor of family members or the entire family, and to start to contribute towards this fund for the next decades and half century and so forth as part of this legacy project, so that everyone's not just, like, what am I going to give this year, but how am I going to...
How do I build a future?
Build a future and rest in that. Like that you spoke at the beginning about, you know, first you're isolated and then you're being chased home, and look, now you're looking at... And also we just spoke about the comfort you felt when you were really participating.
Well, it's not enough. It's not enough to think charitably. You also have to think strategically, especially if you're looking at these, you know, the trends in America don't look great. So it's time to think very strategically.
Yeah. So would you speak to that?
I was heavily involved in the development at the Community Foundation, and one of the things, I was a chairman actually, and one of the things that I brought to the committee is, it's one thing to ask an individual to give, it's another thing to ask an individual to lead their whole family to think about giving, and making a family fund, and including their children in determining what that fund is for, so that passing on, not to that individual. Sure, I could call someone and say, I'd like you to set up a fund and you can direct where it goes. It's another thing to say, I'd like you to bring your family together to determine how that money should be used in the future. And that will give them a stronger feeling about their role in the Jewish community.
Well, it's breaking the concentric circles.
Exactly.
It's democratizing the process of Jewish communal work. It's saying every family has to be its own unit to work. It's almost, in a way, going back to that model that your immigrant ancestors came in. It's this sort of tribal units that look out for each other. Well, now in America, thank God, most people are pretty stable. Now the tribal unit will aim outwards and see how they can reach out. That's so beautiful.
Well, it's also very satisfying when you see it happen. I had my first experience when I was doing that was with a friend that I would have lunch with at least 3 or 4 times a week after we both had retired. And one day he just said to me, and he was very successful and had built up a sizable estate. I don't know how big, but it was enough that he could do most anything he would want.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I have some tax consequences with my estate. And he never opened himself up. But it, just this one thing, he said, I have some tax consequences and I don't know what to do about it. And I said, well, you know, you could contact somebody at the foundation and they have experts in charitable giving and in tax consequences, and you may want to contact them. And that's all I said to him. And then I said, if you want, I can have somebody contact you. And he said, okay. And I had no knowledge of what happened because it was all private until I just got a little emotional because it was a very dear friend. And he developed cancer and he passed away. And after he passed away, I found out that he had made a million-dollar gift to the foundation with certain parameters. And he hadn't shared it with his wife or family that he had done that. And when they found out, they were quite moved. Mm. And they were not charitable at all.
Mm-hmm.
And since that time, both his daughter and his son and his wife have all set up another fund at the foundation because they were moved by what he had done. And even though he hadn't included them, it resonated with them that he had done this, set up a $1 million fund. And I've used that it only takes one conversation sometimes to resonate with somebody that they'll take an action.
What this story exemplifies, and also what I know about you, Dad, is that you see this type of including each member of the family and then each family in the community to really take one's own stand, and then therefore not just feeling secure but actually becoming generous, and then feeling that generosity in the community and how that can
A genius move, because it means aside from the fact that it strategically builds infrastructure, it builds legacy within the family, that connectedness around this sort of these Jewish values.
Just imagine
in and of itself
a mother, a father, and their children talking about what do we want to do with the money that we do charitably, and how do we want to see it directed. It's a whole new conversation for that family in many cases.
Yeah. And we thank you for bringing that to our podcast. We're going to close now.
Man, I sure hope other communities follow those models. It's just, it's one of those, it's you do well by doing good, and you do good by doing well. It creates this cycle.
Yeah, well,
mitzvah, gerer et mitzvah, yeah.
Thank you for being with us today, my father, Elliot Tertis. And thank you, all the listeners, for being with us today. This is the podcast One Way Ur, Jewish Questions and Musings. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.
One Way Ur Podcast.
Thank you, co-host Michael.
I really appreciate being here and talking about legacy. It made me think more deeply about it myself.
You're welcome. Great. A pleasure. And please give feedback on our homepage, onewayor.com. Music is brought to you by Jewish blues pioneer, Saul Kitt.
We'll get that out a little smoother. Okay, bye-bye.